From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette. I'm Araceli Gomez-Aldana in for Greta Johnson. We made it to another weekend. I'm very excited. And we have two excellent guests with us to unpack the week that was. With us this week is Jacoby Cochran, host of the podcast CityCast Chicago. Jacoby, what's up?
What's up, Araceli? I'm happy to be back on Nerdette.
And also with us is Britt Julius, music critic for the Chicago Tribune. Britt, so happy you're here.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
All right, let's start off with the biggest news. Tennis star Serena Williams announced that she plans to retire from tennis after playing the U.S. Open later this month. And her announcement was, you know, she made it on Vogue magazine, very, very posh, where she said that she is stepping away from the sport to focus on her family and her venture capital firm. So this is a huge deal for me. I'm a tennis fan. Jacoby, what about you? How did you take the news?
Oh, my God. For me, tennis in my household was luckily treated with the same reverence as the Super Bowl, the NBA Finals, the World Series. We sat around as a family. Me and my siblings got together to watch U.S. Open Finals. We would get up early to watch Australian and French Open Finals and stick around to watch Wimbledon. And so watching Serena since the late 1990s, I would have been around 8 or 9 years old. She's always been a presence in my household. I watched her first Grand Slam final, the U.S. Open. I watched Venus beat her in her second one. And then decades later, I watched her beat Venus to win what has to this point been her last Grand Slam championship. And so when I saw that Vogue article, I was, you know, brought to emotions. This is a legend, an icon, and a staple in the world of sports and black excellence my entire life. And so, you know, I hope that during the U.S. Open, while tennis tries not to, I mean, not try, right? They put all the attention on their stars, just like every other sport. But she deserves the send-off. She deserves the praise. She deserves an applause break every time she shows her face. I just hope all the flowers are thrown at her during that tournament.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I agree. Britt, what do you think about, you know, Serena leaving and the legacy she'll leave behind?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to say something really silly to start. But so I follow a lot of gossip blogs, and there was this sort of anonymous blind item about the September Vogue cover being like monumental. And it was sort of like going to be groundbreaking news about who was on the cover, right? So people were trying to think, like, which star is it? Who is it going to be? And then when it was revealed to be like Serena, even before I saw that they were sort of announcing that she was, you know, leaving tennis, I was like, oh, she's leaving. I'm like, that's what it is. So that part of me, and it was just, I was like, yeah, that is like kind of groundbreaking, like monumental news. I really feel like I kind of grew up with Serena. Like, she's not very much older than me, and she was this, you know, or is this, you know, black woman who came from really humble beginnings, fighting in sort of white, you know, predominantly white worlds, having people criticize her not only because of you know, how she looks, but the ways in which she performs, right? They would make comments about her, you know, like grunting or you know, sort of saying that she was angry when we've seen other people be much angrier on the courts. So, and she always persevered, right? And she just, you know, she let her talents, her, you know, unique and singular talents speak for themselves and really just sort of be like, you know, I don't have to prove that I'm the greatest because I am the greatest. And that's just how it is. So,
yeah.
You know, I think losing a figure like that in the world of tennis, it's going to be really hard. I mean, there are certainly, you know, lots of younger black tennis players who, you know, followed in Serena's footsteps, probably because they grew up seeing her, you know, play as well. But I still think it's, you know, it's really hard. It's very much like the end of an era for her, and also for me as a, you know, fan as well. It's like, wow, like I didn't even care about tennis literally until I saw
she existed.
Right. But yeah, but you know, I got interested in it and would watch her compete solely because she was this you know, singular important figure for black women.
Yeah.
Yeah. And an end of an era for tennis. I think, I mean, in sports, there's always like this notion of like the GOAT. And like,
right,
Serena is the GOAT, greatest of all time.
Yeah, we ain't got time for none of the arguments, none of the backtracking,
exactly.
None of the Steffi this, Billie Jean, icons in their own right. But when you look at this record, 84% win record, 855 wins, 23 Grand Slam titles. And she wasn't a person who just dominated one Grand Slam. She won each of them at least three times and won a couple of them like seven times. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? One of the U.S. Open six times, like that type of consistency, that type of domination. When she would get to a Grand Slam semifinal, you was probably getting your ass whooped. Mm-hmm. Like, she's probably going to the final. It yep. is hurt to watch her get over that hump of getting that last one, but it was so beautiful to read her words in Vogue where she says, "That's not going to shackle me to this game. That's not what this is about. My legacy is written in stone. So whether I win the US Open, whether I go out, like I know who I am at this point." And that was so beautiful because so many athletes, most of them struggle with when to leave, when to say goodbye. And it's clear she's struggling, but still doing it with all the Serena grace that we've come to love.
Oh, so much grace. And it also makes me think about these other big deal sports retirements. I mean, obviously here in Chicago when Michael Jordan retired, right?
Twice.
Like it's a huge thing. Yeah, twice. And even like Tom Brady's like fake retirement, whatever. Like huge deals. So like I do wonder, does it feel like it's that big of a deal to like the general public? I'm kind of struggling to like get the sense of what people are feeling.
I think so. I mean, it's you know, kind of like what I said before, Serena was a figure who introduced a sport to people who did not know about the sport before, right? So she was someone who really changed the game, not only by her wins, but just by her presence, right? And mm-hmm. so it is a big deal, right? We still don't have a figure, you know, I feel like usually we'll maybe see someone who can kind of like fill those shoes. And maybe we see sort of like kind of sprinklings of it, but not to the same degree that someone like, you know, Serena did for the sport of tennis. And I think it can't be, you know, reiterated or emphasized enough how groundbreaking she was for the sport and how big of a deal it's going to be. I don't really know if I'm going to be watching tennis once she's gone. Like that's,
yeah, shout out to Naomi, shout out to Coco, right. But I'm sorry, y'all ain't
Sloane
Stephens,
yeah,
from Compton.
It'll be a change for sure. Okay, another story that caught our attention this week was about generational warfare, and this time on TikTok. Apparently, Gen Z TikTokers are mocking millennials for cringeworthy behavior online. I do feel personally attacked by this. Kate Lindsay wrote about it for The Atlantic, and some of the social media tics include saying things like adulting or taking selfies from above, which I totally do. Also, taking a so-called millennial pause, where a person has like an awkward moment of silence before speaking in a TikTok just to make sure the video is actually recording. Millennials grew up online, and what, now we're not cool enough to be here? All right, let's listen to one of these TikTok videos.
So, I have some good news. My husband just went to the new Trader Joe's next to our house, and I think it wins the internet for the day. If this is adulting, sign me up.
That video was posted by a TikTok user named Michael Stevens. It received 24,000 likes. I don't know how I feel about this still. Britt, have you experienced any of this on social media? Have you seen it?
So I saw this young TikTok star, probably he just graduated college. I wish I could remember his name because he's like brilliant. He does a lot of stuff sort of very much like a historian and really sort of like breaking down issues as they relate to sort of like Black culture and like Black American culture specifically. And so he was talking about this issue. So that's how I was first introduced to this sort of argument of like millennials versus Gen Z. And he had made a really good point in that a lot of the sort of accusations about you know, millennial culture versus like Gen Z culture, or much more so white millennial culture versus white Gen Z culture. I never said adulting. Like, I always thought that was weird.
I didn't understand none of that shit.
Right? Like, all of that was this, it was so weird to me. And I saw it like happening online and I was like, this is so embarrassing. Like, why are you all talking like this? And this was like six years ago. Do you know what I mean? So hearing that that's like ending, I'm like, that's great because I never liked it in the first place. But also a lot of sort of aspects of that kind of what's thought of as like millennial culture. I'm like, that's a specific type of millennial culture because the millennial culture that I know, right? That I, you know, am a part of, that's the Gen Z culture, right? So Gen Z thinks that, like, the way that they talk, like, you know, thinking of, like, oh, it's giving, or, you know, it's the so-and-so for me. That's all Black culture, right? And that's what I was saying. So for me, I'm like, that's not Gen Z. That's not what's, like, Gen Z cool. That's Black, you know, millennial cool. That's trickling down to people mm-hmm. in Gen Z. And now you're sort of, like, claiming it as your own. That's what I honestly, truly believe. And, like, seeing that TikToker sort of say the same thing, I'm like, okay, I'm not crazy, because all of this Gen Z talk is what I was saying like 10, 15 years ago, 5 years ago. And now it's just sort of trickled down to this younger audience who don't necessarily understand the racial or cultural, origins of these, you know, parts of internet culture, and are sort of taking it for their own.
Yeah. That is so interesting. I'm glad you put that in perspective.
It kind of reminds me, it's an ongoing argument about how much of white queer culture is this like mockery of Black women. Mm-hmm. And Black culture in a way. And so when I look at Gen Z, I mean, when you look at like their fashion choices and a lot of the slang that's coming in, like Britt said, a lot of this is just recycled, but they don't have the context to know what it's recycled from. And I mean, with all generational gaps, what blows me is like the millennial age group is from like 26 to 41. That is a wide, vast group of people experiencing at the far ends of that spectrum, like two completely different realities, right, and version of events that have taken place in this country.
The thing that got me, like when I read the article, and of course I've seen things like this online and like memes and stuff like that. And it's like, why do all millennial women like rose gold, which I do, which I've personally attacked by that one. But the thing is, like, why do we have to verbalize that and like kind of communicate, like, this is what you guys do and this is what we do. And it's like, I know we probably did it with like the older generation, but we really,
we definitely were
on the internet before anybody. I mean, like, that's the fact. And then also, I just kind of look at like the aesthetic right now, and it's all like very 90s. And I was like, so you guys are going to bash us, but you're going to wear the clothes and you want to, you know, wear the T-shirts. It's like very strange.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with you. I mean, I think of like as when I was sort of, you know, the equivalent of Gen Z age as a, like a millennial, and thinking of Gen X, I didn't really think that Gen X was like uncool. I actually thought that they were like very cool. And I was quite upset that like a lot of parts of my, you know, kind of high school and college experience, like, didn't have the sort of freedom that they had, right? So they didn't have, like, the cell phones and the cameras and things like that. And so, you know, those, I'm like, they could just go out and have fun and no one had to know any of their business. I loved the music, you know, like, I was a child in the 90s. So hearing all of the, like, the R&B and the hip hop, like, I was like, oh, it'd be so cool to be in a club and, you know, hear that kind of stuff. So then when I was actually in college, I went to a bar where in the back room this one DJ would play all that kind of music, right? So it never really I never had this feeling of like, oh my god, like the generation right before me is uncool. Now boomers, absolutely, right? Like they had room to, we had room.
Sorry,
to, so that's why I feel like our attacks were towards them, but it was never towards Gen X. So it's very funny for me to hear like Gen Z be like, millennials this, millennials that, and I'm like, no, wait a minute, We weren't doing that. So why you gotta do that
to
us?
We was here. Right? We was here after Atari. We had like some really sophisticated gaming systems, mm-hmm. and our internet was slow as hell. But like, come on,
but we had
we was out there talking to anonymous strangers too.
Exactly.
questionable behavior for sure.
Questionable choices for sure. For sure. I wouldn't trade where I'm at though. I feel like it's right before the kid, like the young folks, is inoculated with technology, but right after, like Britt said, that generation where, you know, they didn't have to worry about 100% surveillance. So I feel like I got a little bit of both worlds. You know, I love Gen Z. They just love. They're a little fun.
In just a minute, we're going to talk about the bear and Italian beef sandwiches. Stay with us. The Bear, the show. Have you guys seen it?
I did.
I've seen most of it. I haven't seen the entirety of it, but most of it, yes.
Well, everybody's talking about it, especially here in Chicago. The Bear from FX, for those who have not seen it, it's a show about a high-end chef who takes over an Italian beef sandwich joint in Chicago after the owner, his brother, passes away. And well, this week, the New York Times found that since the show came out on Hulu in June, demand for Italian beef sandwiches has skyrocketed. Not only in Chicago, but in places like Kansas City and Brooklyn. Jacoby, you're from Chicago. Did you grow up eating Italian beef sandwiches?
Nah, I did not.
Okay, that's
shocking. I'm from the part of Chicago where we eat sweet steaks. right? If I'm going to put just a bunch of meat on a French roll and put a couple of vegetables or some sweet peppers on it, it's going to be sweet steak from like Home of the Hoagie or, you know, RIP Taurus. Like, and so a lot of the like idiosyncrasies of the bear, I love the show, but they were such like, felt like to me, like, you know, white Chicago idiosyncrasy, so I wouldn't have known if they were accurate or inaccurate. But yeah, I haven't eaten an Italian beef since, but I have had a hoagie and I have had a sweet steak, because those are the sandwiches that I grew up with. If I go to Al's Beef, I'm probably going to get like an Italian sausage, to be real with you.
Ooh, interesting. Interesting. I was expecting to say like, oh yeah, you know, totally. I eat one every day.
Hell no. I mean, they good. I don't dislike them. They don't hold a candle to a sweet steak. So if I'm going to invest in a big ass sandwich, I'm going to go and stand at home with a hoagie line and put some extra sauce on it.
Cool. What about you, Britt? What do you think about this? You know, have you had one since you saw the show? Like, do you get this whole like craze about it?
I have not had an Italian beef since I've seen the show, because I've never had an Italian beef before. So,
what?
Yeah.
Man, this was the wrong one for this part of Chicago. We don't eat them. We don't even mess with them.
Yeah, I'm much more of a, like, you know, if I'm having anything, like, I'm probably having like a Chicago style hot dog. Like, that's more of my kind of jam. Like, I was never really, it just never really appealed to me. But I grew up with, like, you know, my father loved them. Like, my sister would have them a lot, you know. So I understand, like, how important they are, why people like them, the culture behind them, etc. But that was just, you know, I'm maybe more of, like, a little bit of an anomaly in that sense. But yeah, like, it's never really, like, appealed to me. I'm like, I don't know. I was like, I'm just going to get my normal, like, hot dog. Like,
yeah, I'm just get my hot dog. Maybe a cheese dog, just to feel a little,
right?
A little fancier.
Like,
cheese dog.
Exactly.
I grew up in Northwest Indiana, and so, like, we grew up with Italian beef sandwiches. Like, people had them at parties all the time, or, like, you would go at a restaurant, you can get them. And I thought Italian beef sandwiches were, like, an American thing. Like, I thought everybody ate Italian beef sandwiches, and it wasn't until I left Chicago, or, like, the Chicago area, that they're like, no, what is that, and, like, what are you talking about? So that's super interesting. I just like the idea of, like, people in, like, Kansas City, like, walking around, like, trying to either make their own Italian beef sandwich or, like, looking for one. And I do wonder if it's going to, like, make, you know, people come to Chicago just for that.
I love that.
All right, Britt, Jacoby, thank you so much. I had so much fun, and thanks for joining us today on Nerdette.
Hey, it's always a pleasure. Good to see you, Araceli. Good to see you, Britt.
Thank you. This was wonderful.
All right, that's it for this week. Thanks for listening. If you're not already signed up for our newsletter, you should be, especially because I'll be sharing things that are making me happy this week. And you can sign up at wbez.org/newsletters. Maggie Civet builds it every week. The show is produced by Greta Johnson and Anna Bauman. Our executive producer is Brendan Banaszak. I'm your guest host, Araceli Gomez-Saldana. Greta will be back next week. Bye, y'all.